welcome to the pulldown. I'm so grateful and thankful that you decided to give this one a try. Today I have an amazing episode for you, so I'm sure you're gonna love it. I have 31 reasons why we should all quit Facebook. And, you know, I don't know when was the last time I was so excited for an episode. It's going to be a great one. But before I start, I have to tell you that, you know, the pull-down episode is available on most podcasting platforms. So whenever you're listening to your podcasts, make sure that you subscribe to the pull-down. It's available for free. The pull-down also, you know, doesn't have any ads or anything like that. So I'm so happy to announce that, you know, you can subscribe and listen to the pulldown for free. Now, there is another thing that I have to tell you about, which is I have to give you an update from the previous week, the previous podcast, about my digital decluttering. Now, if you haven't listened to that episode, I strongly recommend you give it a listen. And this weekend, I actually clean up all of the things that I told you in the episode, all of the things that, you know, I said is actually good to do. I actually did it myself. It took me probably around an hour and a half, I would say. And, you know, and I feel super comfortable now. I really recommend that you do the digital decluttering yourself. Like, my downloads folder is completely empty now. My screenshots folder is almost empty now. All of the applications that I have on my computer and my smartphone are, you know, cleaned up. There is nothing that I don't use here. My desktop and my documents are also very well organized. Everything is, you know, well managed. So I'm so grateful that I did this. And again, if you haven't, make sure that you listen to the previous episode where I talk about, you know, how to actually do it, what to do, what are the things that you have to look out. So give it a listen. Okay, let's start with 31 reasons why we should quit Facebook. Now, I have to tell you that I am still a Facebook user. I don't use Facebook.com, I don't have Facebook app on my phone, but I do use their messaging service. And it's quite hard for me to, you know, get rid of Facebook, to delete Facebook. I've tried a couple of times and I'm, you know, really thinking about it now more and more often to maybe just disconnect. Around 2 years ago, I decided to delete my personal Instagram account, and, you know, I did it and it felt really good. And now that I look back, it was probably one of the best decisions that I did with my, you know, when it comes to my own personal life, when it comes to, you know, my well-being, my mental health. It was a really good decision. But I totally understand how hard it is to leave something that you feel so related to. And as you can see, even I haven't, you know, left Facebook. I still have my Facebook account. And, you know, it's, for me, again, it's really hard to leave Facebook because all of my friends are on there. And I communicate with most of my friends using Facebook Messenger. Now, I've been working quite hard to actually convince some of my friends to switch to other platforms and other messaging applications. And, you know, it's been like this long run when I have to just do my work and just, you know, do some preparation. And maybe in the future, I will be ready to delete my Facebook account. But today, I want to give you 31 reasons, you know, why we should quit Facebook. Now, this post was actually, you know, this episode is actually a kind of available thanks to the Louis from Canada. Louis from Canada decided that he wants to quit Facebook, and he did it on 21st of August 2020. He actually quitted Facebook. And he wrote 31 reasons why we all should quit Facebook. And I want to go through his reasons and give some of the explanation, kind of put them all together and kind of give you this, you know, perspective on why Facebook can be a really bad social media and bad, you know, platform in general. Now, the first one, is the escape the circle of dependency. Now, he argues that, you know, users are being extremely tied to the power of the platforms like Facebook and Instagram because of the network effects that those that these platforms have. You know, if most of your friends are using Facebook and you're already on Facebook, you're very well connected through that one point, which means that if you decide to leave Facebook, it could be very hard to, you know, decided to kind of remove all of those connections you made in the past. He also argues that such ecosystems, you know, Facebook has a lot of different design metrics and a lot of different applications outside of Facebook, can be designed like a slot machines to, you know, capture your attention as long as possible, because again, you know, that's their business logic behind it. Okay, reason number two, it's time consuming. Now, he now mentions some of the numbers, and to be completely honest, I'm not sure if those numbers are real because it seems pretty scary. So here it goes. The average user spends 58 minutes per day on Facebook. And that's not counting platforms like Instagram, 53 minutes, Snapchat, 49 minutes, and others. You know, this is a really scary metric, and I wish that, you know, more people would kind of realize how much time we are spending on these platforms. And again, you know, he argues that, you know, it's very time consuming to do something like it, like, you know, to use and be a Facebook or an Instagram or a Snapchat user. And I totally agree with that. I think that, you know, I spend so much time on social media without any real gain or without any real advantage, or, you know, I haven't really learned everything. It's just this passive consumption, and it's quite scary. Okay, number three, more fake news. So he mentions a recent study published in Nature Human Behavior shows that Facebook spreads fake news more than any other platform. You know, he argues that the problem with Facebook is that Facebook is profitable, which means that they want your attention, then they want to keep you on the platform, they want to keep you scrolling, because that makes sense for them, a financial sense for them to have you on the platform. And Facebook realize, or, you know, the algorithms learn on the behavior of their users, that if the user is being enraged, or, you know, is being kind of filled with fake information on a regular basis, that user stays on the platform longer. And so the algorithms now, you know, are kind of starting to recommend fake news more than, you know, than normal non-fake news. And that could be a really big and a harmful thing for our health, especially in the corona pandemic, and also to the health of the democracies around the world. So you know, it's really bad that we see such a big widespread of misinformation, especially now on Facebook. And I've seen that, you know, misinformation thing happening in the US, but in the recent years, it has become more and more popular also here in Europe. Okay, number four, it foments extremism. So the main, you know, point that the author of this website, you know, kind of makes is that Facebook kind of create a filter bubble for its users. Now, if you're not aware of the term filter bubble is a very personalized universe that user is being kind of, you know, in this bubble, because the user don't see the posts that most other people see, because every single user gets their personalized feed and their personalized articles, opinions, groups, and so on, and they start to become part of this universe, part of this filter bubble, with the content that they want to consume. And there is nothing wrong with that if, you know, we're talking about a tech bubble or a healthy bubble, or, you know, any other variety of topics. But if people are gonna start, you know, getting themselves into extremist filter bubbles, into misinformation filter bubbles, it can be a huge, huge problem. Okay, let's go to number five. The propagation of hate speech. Now, you know, Facebook has enabled hate speech to propagate faster and more, you know, and kind of in a bigger way, allowing more voices to spread hate and to spread hate speech on Facebook platforms. And this has been the issue for quite some time. And again, you know, this is something that you don't want to be a part of, because in my opinion, when I take a look at it, I see that negative effects I get when I just read something hateful on Twitter, or that I get a hateful comment or anything like that. You know, it definitely has a negative effect on my well-being. Okay, number six, waiting for notifications. So there are over 2 billion active users on Facebook. So Facebook can really focus on maximizing time those users spend on their platform, and they want to send you notification in order to, you know, increase the addictiveness of their platforms. They want to interrupt your day. They want to, you know, get your attention so they can kind of, you know, get you to scroll on the on their platform. And, you know, that means that's how they make money. So it's reasonable for Facebook to do it, but it's extremely harmful. And I realized I have almost all of my notifications turned off on my phone, on my computer, and it makes a big sense to leave Facebook for the addictiveness aspect. Okay, number seven, a fake, you know, measure of social media status. You know, it's really interesting how we people decided that, you know, it matters how much likes, comments, messages, and followers do you have. And, you know, there is a really big vulnerable audience and vulnerable people, especially the teenagers, who are just, you know, just starting to form their identity, to get really into this craving for attention and, you know, likes and being in the center of the attention. And for me, that's a really bad thing. And I've realized that Instagram has this problem all over the place, but again, probably just as much as Facebook. And for me, when I quit Instagram, I didn't know if it was the right decision. I knew that it was a good decision, but I didn't know how I would feel on the long run. And now that kind of after probably around 2 years later, I can tell you that I feel quite well. But again, quitting Facebook for me, you know, I would quit Facebook today if I could, but I have to just do a couple of more steps to get some of the friends, you know, to other messaging platforms so I can, you know, leave the Facebook without any casualties. Okay, number eight. To exist in the eyes of others. Now, this is a very, you know, similar topic to the previous point, where you kind of think that you don't exist if you don't have a Facebook. Like, you think that without likes and without views and without friends or followers, that your identity, you know, isn't there or isn't present. So I definitely believe that it's time to kind of move away from Facebook and move away from social media as being the place to see who the person really is, and, you know, kind of contacting and taking control of our own lives. Okay, number nine, too many ads. You know, and that's just the one reason that, you know, I would just, for this reason alone, I would leave Facebook. So the part of Facebook's terms of service is that in order to use the platform for free, you must consent to give some of your personal data and information to kind of to Facebook, so that Facebook can build targeted profiles around that data to better advertise to you. And for me, this is kind of a, again, a big issue. I don't like ads. That's why the pull down, this podcast, is actually ad free. Also, my blog, which you can, you know, check out right now, is also ad free. If you want to check out my blog, Zeno blog, just head to the description of this episode and you should see the link to the blog there. You click it, there are no ads, and I absolutely love that. But yeah, Facebook, again, you know, wants you to give them some of their data. They want you to visit their website and use their services so they can, you know, show you the ads and use your data against you. Okay, number 10, Facebook knows too much about its users. Now, this again is very similar point to the what I already mentioned. You know, Facebook has this really big way of learning and kind of getting all of the data they need. And it's quite scary for me because I've realized that, you know, Facebook, with each click you do and each move and each convert, you know, with each click and each fraction of a second you pause on scrolling, they use that data, that use that metadata to kind of, you know, better target their ads, to, you know, keep you scrolling for longer. And you know, such platforms build, you know, they build a very, very detailed profiles about each of their users. And that's quite scary for me as someone who believes that privacy is a really important thing. And, you know, I value my privacy online and offline quite a lot. Number 11, we are constantly being followed. You know, on Facebook, there is no single, you know, interaction that goes unnoticed by the platform. Every time you know, the company, the Facebook, even track every single one of us, mostly, you know, most of us, even outside of their ecosystem. So if you, even if you're not using Facebook, even if you're not a Facebook user, even if you don't have a Facebook account, Facebook actually have something called shadow profile, I think. It's not being mentioned here, but shadow profiles Facebook create based on the interaction users do on the internet. Whenever a website has a like button on their website. So whenever you see a like button integrated in a website, that means that Facebook has access, a third party access, to the data of that website. So they can see a bunch of things and gather a bunch of data from that website and their users. So, you know, this means that even if you're not into the, even if you're not part of the Facebook ecosystem, you are still being used and Facebook is still collecting data against you. Okay, number 12, continuous geolocation. Yes, Facebook can actually track your location. Whenever you use Facebook app, whenever you open Facebook app, or whenever you upload photos and videos, the metadata inside of those photos, you know, tell Facebook where that photo was taken, and Facebook can use that data to actually, you know, do some location-based advertising. And that's, you know, geotagging, and it's a really, really bad thing, and another way that Facebook kind of builds their profile using your data without most of the time you even knowing. Okay, number 13, a worldwide facial recognition system. Yes, Facebook has all of our faces, and they're using, and Facebook is using our faces to train their, facial recognition systems and algorithms. And, you know, that means that they can be they can be used at any point against us. So they have a lot of also biometric data about us. As Facebook photo collection continues to grow, it seems unsure whether we could, you know, ever escape this mass scale automated image identification system that could be used maybe in the protest that Facebook could offer to law enforcement and so on. Okay, shadow profiles, number 14. Yes, so I already mentioned shadow profiles, but this is another great way, you know, to tell you that even if you're not on Facebook, you are being tracked, your friends, you know, if, for example, there is this great example, your friends have your have their own, you know, your contact on their phone, you know, they have your name, they have your phone number, and Facebook uses this feature, Find Friends, to scan all of your contact list for people, right? And, you know, they use information, even if they don't find someone on Facebook, even if you're not on Facebook, to build those shadow profiles. And, you know, it's quite scary. Okay, the dispossession of personal data. Yes, Facebook is a free service, but in exchange for the free, you exchange your own personal data, right? And we often hear that personal data is the new oil of the 21st century. And this data capitalism is an extremely lucrative economy that is kind of taking advantage of the users without really, you know, without the really a realization from the user part that they're being actually exploited. And this is a really, you know, big problem, and kind of the point that we are the means of the production of those companies, because we're not the product, right? The product is actually the advertising space. We are the means that the Facebook gets the money. We're the means of the production of the system, which is quite scary. Okay, number 16. Facebook threatens our right to privacy. So there is this comment, yes, but I have nothing to hide, that is kind of being thrown at every single one of, you know, even me when I talk about privacy. And I agree, you know, most of the people don't have nothing to hide, but the privacy aspect really doesn't have anything to do with you having nothing to hide. It's about some of the fundamental freedoms and protections in our society that should be, you know, in place to kind of give ourselves option to not being exploited on a large scale by those tech companies. And Facebook has, you know, this big terms of service that you have to accept, and they do a lot, you know, they do a lot to kind of use that against you. Okay, number 17, the prediction of our behavior. Yes, Facebook actually uses a lot of their data that they gather to predict some of the trends, to predict some of the ads that we want to see. Because, you know, if you ever heard a story that Facebook is maybe listening to our smartphones or listening to us talk because we just mentioned this product and it's, you know, right now we see the ad for it, you know, in a sense, or at least as far as we know, Facebook does not listen to our conversation. Facebook does not record our conversations, but Facebook does have a lot of, you know, kind of investment done into the way of personalization and of prediction of our behavior. And because they have billions of users, such prediction models can be extremely good at what they do. Number 18, the modification of our behavior. Now, the author now mentions Shoshana Zuboff and her book, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. I have that book right over there on my where all of the books I have are, and I absolutely love that book. I would 100% recommend you should, you know, check it out. Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, I'm just going to read the paraphrase from the book. The fundamental purpose of most people at Facebook working on our data is to influence and alter people's moods and behavior. They're doing it all the time to make, you know, to make you like stories, to make you click on more ads and spend more time on their site. This is just how their website works. Everyone does this, and everyone knows that everyone does this. And this is a quote from a former Facebook product manager. Again, to influence and alter people's moods and behavior. This is extremely important because if Facebook wants you to keep on the platform, if Facebook wants you to click on that ad, they have to find the right time to serve you that ad. They have to find the right time to send that notification to distract you from what you're doing, to change your behavior so you are starting to scroll Facebook. Okay. Number 19, the division of knowledge. The inner working of the platform is to, you know, keep us, in a sense, without our knowledge, without knowing what the company actually collects about us. You know, this is an extremely, you know, it's really hard to know what kind of data does the Facebook collect about us and what kind of, in what way, you know, does Facebook use our data, not just the data that we submit, you know, by uploading photos or liking something, but the metadata that we, you know, how much time we use Facebook, what do we do when we use Facebook? All of that is a very useful data. And, you know, again, Facebook is kind of neglecting our privacy and not giving us information about, you know, what they actually store about our usage. Number 20, the capital outflow. Yes, Facebook sells really powerful advertisement products to governments, companies, and individuals thanks to all of the, you know, analyses and collection and prediction and behavior modification that they have, you know, available. They are a really large company. For example, the Canadian government spent more than $24 million in advertisement and sponsored content on Facebook. And, you know, that's, you know, it shows that Facebook has, you know, this need for governments to, you know, to actually sell them something, not just the advertising space, but also some of the models, the prediction and the behaviors that, you know, they have collected throughout the years about its users. It's a, you know, all of that data is a very valuable data. And thanks to the offshore deals, Facebook does not, you know, does a lot of tax avoidance in the United States, where, you know, the Facebook has their headquarters, and elsewhere in the world, the Facebook pays, and a lot of other big tech companies, you know, avoid paying taxes. And there is also, you know, that's also a really big problem. At least for me, I pay taxes, and it's quite scary, and it's quite, you know, humiliating, and I qualify, and I feel quite angry that, you know, Facebook, as a service that, you know, gets and creates so many millions and millions of dollars or of revenue every single year, pays a really low taxes. Number 21, Facebook hurts the local economy. Giants like Facebook kind of abuse their market position to squeeze some of the competitors and some of the, for example, the newspapers out of their business, because most of the attention, most of the people are now consuming Facebook, and their business model often relies on, you know, for example, the business model of the newspapers, you know, sometimes relies on ad placements inside of their ecosystem. And Facebook has a very similar business model, but with a really big scale, you know, that, you know, a small newspaper cannot compete with. So I totally agree that Facebook can hurt local economy, and because, you know, being for free model worked for so long, some other companies on the market may not be able to sustain the free model because they don't have the position and the monopoly on the market to sustain their business. Number 22. to the control over the market. Facebook has admitted to have copied some of the products from their competitors or to acquire some of them to prevent them to dominating and or even entering the market. And you know, Instagram was one of those. They have copied so many products. They have launched so many products that have very similar features to some of their competitors. And this just states how dominating and how harmful Facebook can be, again, to the economy and to the overall market, and at the end of the day, to the consumer itself, to the, you know, the ad businesses, to everyone who relies on placing ads on the web, or to everyone who relies on, you know, having social media, you know, creating, having social media with, you know, maybe a more privacy respecting terms and conditions. Okay, number 23, the holdover information. So who kind of decides what is acceptable and what is not acceptable on Facebook? Because Facebook, their moderation policies have raised many questions about, you know, what should be censored and what should be allowed. And there is also, you know, this big issue that I watched the I think a documentary about probably around a couple of months ago about the human cost associated with content moderation, because Facebook actually pays some of the people from second or, you know, from less developed countries to moderate the content, and those people actually have to watch some really horrific and really bad material, and overall it's a really bad problem. And you know, Facebook has become nothing less than kind of a new global authority. Okay, number 24, the middleman of all communication. Facebook kind of seeks to become the middleman in most, if not all, of our online communication. The company owns 4 out of 10 most downloaded apps, and have this, like, they own Facebook, Facebook Messenger, Instagram, WhatsApp, with more than 3.1 billion active users across their services. And that's a quite a scary number. And we kind of see that, you know, I have a big problem with this exact point that, you know, Facebook is kind of using that connection of my friends, using that, you know, kind of network effect against me, because, you know, I kind of can't leave Facebook for that reason alone, because I have so many people on there and I have, you know, this a really big need to actually communicate with those people. And, you know, to decide to leave Facebook, it's quite a problematic thing to do. Number 25, the political interference. Yes, Facebook has played a big determining role in political interference during the 2016 American election through Russian interference and the Cambridge Analytica data breach and scandal. I'm sure you heard of it. I'm not going to go through this. It's a really awful thing. I have this really awesome book that I also read called The Mindfuck by Christopher Weil. I'm going to link the book and all of the things that I talk about in this podcast, in this episode, into the episode show notes. So make sure you check out the show notes, the description of this episode, for all of the links, including this book that I just mentioned. Number 26, an unfettered capitalism. Yes, since the invention of Facebook and Google, there has been this really big data capitalism emerging quickly, using, you know, and kind of gaining and mining data from users to take advantage of their ignorance, because of the, you know, users not being, you know, not wanting to read hundreds and hundreds of words in the terms of service. And they need this data collection for their highly performant advertisement products. So I'm going to quote something again. Surveillance capitalism rose from invention invention to dominate in record time. Surveillance capitalism's velocities outrun democracy even as they outrun our ability to understand what is happening and consider the consequences. And I totally believe that, you know, our human experience is now being transported as a raw material to gather to being fed to some of those big giants that are collecting our data. And there is very little regulation when it comes to data gathering and data manipulation and, you know, kind of abusing and using our data against us. Okay, number 27, the dictatorship of force-led alternatives. Facebook used a lot of anti-competitive strategies to increase their domination on the market. They have been acquiring and, you know, kind of creating and copying very similar products. So they become and they are, you know, dominating the market. The dictatorship of no alternatives is in full force here. I'm again quoting. It is ever more difficult to identify avenues of escape, let alone genuine alternatives, because there are really no alternatives to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know, those are really the big players, and there are real no alternatives to those products because they're in a sense dominating the market. They're using their dominance to their advantage. And, you know, currently there is no regulation, no serious regulation to actually deal with this. Number 28, an unprecedented species of power. Yes, okay, I don't know if I read that correctly, but we are kind of seeing that Facebook as a private entity is today, has a lot of power when it comes to what people see, what people learn, what people, you know, experience, what data is actually being censored. And in a sense, this means that, you know, our data has been used, you know, against us, you know. And there is a lot of other things that the author now states in this point. And I totally agree with all of this, but let's continue to number 29, the right to autonomous future. In a sense, autonomy means that the capacity to govern the self rather than being governed by others. You know, and this to be autonomous, it means that it allows us to think for by ourselves, to make, you know, authentic decisions, to make a well-educated decisions for ourselves. And, you know, Facebook is kind of, being and using their surveillance capitalism tools to gather data to show you things that, you know, maybe you don't want to see, or to show you things that could be harmful for your thinking, and the power that Facebook has over those things is extremely big and large, because again, Facebook is one of the largest social media networks available today. And in a sense, Facebook is kind of constantly doing experiments on their users in order to kind of determine, you know, what makes them spend more time online. And in a sense, this is a mass scale laboratory that is quite, you know, quite worrisome. Okay, number 30, a threat to democracy. Again, I'm going to quote right now. This makes for a dangerous mix. A company that reaches most of the country every day and has the most detailed set of personal data ever assembled, but has no incentive to prevent abuse. Facebook needs to be regulated more tightly or broken up so that no single entity controls all of its data. The company won't protect us by itself, and nothing less than our democracy is at stake. And this is the ex-operation manager at Facebook. And, you know, to be completely honest, this is quite scary. But let's move on to number 31 and the last reason why we all should leave Facebook. The exclusion from the public and social life. Again, I'm going to quote here Shoshana Zuboff. Many people feel that if you're not on Facebook, you do not exist. With so much energy, success, and capital flowing into the surveillance capitalism domain, standing outside of it, let alone against it, can feel a very lonely and risky prospect. In a sense, Facebook has become part of our social life. It's really hard to be able to exist without those companies, without those ecosystems on our own. We're kind of grown numb the feeling of helplessness, you know, when you want to leave Facebook. And in a sense, Facebook hurts some of our most human nature and some of the most, you know, precious things that we have as humans, like the right to free will, you know, to think and to be able to decide for ourselves. The second thing that Facebook hurts is this way of individual, you know, the private life as a way of, you know, Facebook is using our private life for their commercial purpose. And again, the trust, you know, to enable, you know, the social media to feed a highly lucrative, predictive surveillance regime. You know, to be completely honest, I've read, you know, all of those posts when the author was actually publishing them in 2020. And now that I've gone through all of them again, I feel like that, you know, Facebook is, you know, a really problematic social media. And again, all of the social media have very similar tendencies that what I just read about Facebook. And I want to think about that. And I believe that if you follow me throughout this episode, and you will probably, you know, in the next hours, in the next days, maybe start thinking about, you know, leaving Facebook or leaving some social media. And in a sense, I hope you do. I hope, you know, it goes well. And I'm going to, again, give you updates if I decide to leave Facebook. I definitely have been planning to leave Facebook for probably a couple of months now. And it's been on my mind for a couple of years now. So I really want to, you know, educate myself and learn about these things. And I think this was a very productive way and productive thinking and a really great way to kind of learn more about, you know, and give myself a few reasons to quit Facebook. Now, before I end this episode, I would like to really thank you for, you know, giving it a go, for deciding to listen to this episode. I'm super thankful and grateful. And I would, you know, if you want, you can subscribe to this podcast for free. You can subscribe to the Pulldown whenever you're listening to podcasts. And if I can tease, the next episode will be the 10 solutions how to get out and how to live a life without social media. So if you want to hear that episode, make sure to be subscribed and you will get it right in your podcast app when it's available. Before I go, I have to mention that I have a really cool newsletter about technology where I publish all of the material that I kind of find interesting on the internet. I usually publish articles, images, setups, tweets, everything that I found interesting in that newsletter. It's called Zeno Letter, and you can subscribe to that newsletter for free. There are more than 1,000 people already subscribed. I don't spam. I only post. I only send out one newsletter per month. So I 100% recommend you subscribe to Zeno Letter so you don't miss out on all of the content and all of the things that I have to tell you about technology, well-being, privacy, and more. Again, thank you so much for listening to the Pulldown. I'm so, so happy and grateful that you decided to join, and hope you enjoyed this one. Make sure that you share this episode with your friends. Please stay safe and bye-bye.